Hey Tim, how you doing?
I'm good. I get to be the first one in.
Wow. You're the first one in. Well, that means you can be the first one to talk if you want to talk. Wow. But I'm curious to know how you're doing, how things are going. So I'm going to make you talk whether you like it or not. How are things going?
Rolling along. I'm just walking out of a meeting where I'm using lessons from Shane Hips with an employee. So
I want to hear more about that. what'd you do?
Well, today's been a Shane Hips day, I'll say that.
All right. You want to turn your camera on so I can see your gorgeous face? There we go.
Yeah. How we doing?
That's the man I was missing. Sorry, please continue.
So I have all sorts of emotions among employees going on. So I have a dispute happening between a couple employees that keeps on getting charged and eating up time for managers and problems. So I was having a conversation this morning about that. So I was already annoyed by some of the information that was coming out about that and just frustrated with the fact that I've got to manage these problems and take care of these problems. And so I was like, that was my first meeting of the morning. We were talking about that problem. And then just walked out of that meeting, was out of that and no less than 15 minutes later. And a manager came back to me with a completely brand new problem with a completely other employee.
I need to take this segment and put it in my marketing as like why people should do this work because you're capturing what's at the heart of management that a lot of people don't realize. So,
and I always take because I had four kids, right? So yeah. I always, the best analogy for working with employees is working with kids, right? So this was the exact conversation that I brought into that conversation, which is, how many times did I explode at my kids because I was angry? Far too many, far too many. And I regret every one of them.
Right.
And I'm going into this meeting and I'm already angry because of the first meeting that I had. And then coming into the next one and I hear Shane in my ear saying, I'm dealing with emotional systems. I need to go into this meeting not going off on the next employee because of the problem I had with the last employee. And I'm already upset. So
yeah, right.
Control of my emotions first, so that I don't explode on the second employee or the third employee over the problems of the first two. So I got to get, and that's what you do with your kids, right? If you're angry, you got to step away for a minute till you can deal with my kids without exploding on them.
Yeah, yeah.
You bring the same exercise to my employees, which is, hey, I got to step away for a minute. Get my composure so I can go into this without exploding on them because of whatever else. So that's my Shane Hip story for the moment, is remembering that I'm dealing with emotional systems and this person's got other stuff going on. And it turns out that the problem had a deeper root that did require some compassion and required me to not be annoyed. And I probably would have not gone into that meeting in the right headspace.
So first of all, what was the other issue that was being precipitated?
The first one or the second one?
You said one of them had a deeper issue. Is that right?
Oh, the second issue. So this particular employee was wanting to take their PTO, let's say half an hour, an hour. So work a half an hour less a week and never take a vacation. And it felt like going into it that maybe they just didn't want to work very hard or they wanted to take work less.
Right.
Right. So that was my gut reaction, is like, mm-hmm. They're just being lazy. They don't really want to work. This is really annoying.
Yep.
But when we really get into the topic, this person's going through a divorce, has a lot of issues at home that are really struggling with, and has a lot of things going on in their life. And they don't want to take a vacation because time alone is really painful.
Yeah.
So it really is
beautiful. Wow, man, that's beautiful to talk about that, because that's at the heart of this whole, like, so many of these decisions and requests and behaviors are governed by those underlying emotions. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah. So when we really got down to it, then he broke down in tears because he didn't really want to have time alone.
Oh, heartbreaking. Well, I'm glad. So then,
now I still am, you know, and this is where I'm just trying to decide. And I was like, well, I can step away from this. I don't want to make a decision here on the spot. But my gut is that we still need to follow the standard. You still need to do it. If you want to give up your vacation time, that's what you need to do. But you still have to work the hours you got to work. Because I can't give you PTO and hour spots. And if I think, as I understand the federal rules or laws related to PTO, it has to be given in full day blocks. You can't take half day or partial day blocks. Or if you do, the person could come back and sue you for not paying entire days if you're on salary. So.
Well, it's worth finding out what your kind of federal, I don't know what federal requirements are, actually. Honestly, I haven't looked.
Pretty certain I'm right on this one, but I'll.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, check it out, but make sure you don't walk past what that person's going through, because their productivity is tanking no matter what. And the less, if you just come back to them with the government doesn't allow you to grieve the way you want to grieve. Sorry. It ends up going pretty bad. So, Michelle's got a line on that. Michelle's an HR person. So Michelle, why don't you comment on that in case it's of value?
Hi, thanks, Shane. If the employee is exempt from overtime, then any time that they're working, you have still have to pay them the full day. So even if I work 1 hour and I didn't do anything the rest of the day, I still get my full salary for the day. Yep. If it's a non-exempt employee, unless you're in a particular state that regulates, there's nothing federally that regulates any PTO time. The only states that have regulation at this moment are certain states around sick time, but those are very defined reasons to why they need to take it. And it could, because of what's going on, they could fall into that realm.
Yeah, South Carolina, where we are, the laws are pretty lenient for the employer. But
So you do not have a required sick leave program in South Carolina. So it would be up to how you would like to provide the assistance at this time. You would not federally be required to pay any unpaid time off.
Right.
Outside of what you have in your handbook. You do have to abide of what you have in your handbook.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so she's just confirming what my understanding was, which is that. But agreed, Shane, and that's why I said I want to step away, because I can look at the human side of it and go, you know, what can we do? This particular drama has been going on for about 2 years. I've had times with this particular employee where the productivity has been so low that if I wasn't looking at the human side, I would have let them go a year and a half ago.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
I've really put up with a lot over time, and it's in a much better place than it was. The productivity is way up from where it was. It was almost zero for a little bit. So,
Okay. Well, in any case, yeah, there are limits to how much you can put up with whatever's going on in a personal life. So I appreciate that, but okay, good. Well, the other thing that I want to just sort of flag for you is I'd be curious to know for you how often anger is your first response when there's an emotional system disturbance. Like, what percentage of the time would you say anger is your first response?
Probably too much.
Without judging it, right? Not too much, not too little. That's a judgment. So just on a scale of, you know, 1 to 10 or a percentage of the time, the less judgmental you are of whatever it is, the more clearly you'll be able to see what it is. So I don't have a judgment about it. I'm just really interested in what you experience. So what percentage of the time would you say disturbance in the system creates something on the scale of anger? Irritation, frustration, anger, rage, you know, the anger has a scale, right? Of minor to major versus another one could have been fear. Another could be sadness. So there's different emotional valences that are going to be negative. Like when whenever the emotional system is disturbed, and by the way, this goes for all of you on this call, whenever you feel like I have to deal with an employee who's doing something or feeling something or asking for something that I think is either unreasonable or just going to impact my productivity today for myself, any of those kinds of things will produce emotions. For some people, it's fear. For some people, it's anger. For some people, it's sadness. Those tend to be the three. And I don't mean like they get literally sad. They might, sadness sometimes becomes a form of compassion. Like they're more likely to just move to want to always help, right? And there's not a right or wrong here. Any and all of those feelings may be appropriate given what the context is. You just want to triangulate, what is my pattern? What is my natural habituated response? Because the more awake you are to that, the more we can actually work with it. And I don't mean fix it, because it may not be broken. Like you just alluded to this. Let's imagine that person has been taking advantage of you for years and years and years, and you've been nothing but kind, and now you're full of rage. Well, guess what? That's an appropriate reaction, right? Or maybe this is their first infraction and you're full of rage. We might go, maybe there's a different reaction, right? But for now, we just have to figure out, what is your natural habit? And if you don't have the answer now, that's fine. I just want you to be reflecting on that a little bit.
No, I think anger probably is more the default than not.
Okay, cool. That's good.
I don't think that I often let that get out into the actual behavior toward the employee. So usually I can catch it or take a step back before I get there. Not to say I never do. But I don't think any of my employees would describe me as an angry person. Let's put it that way. So that means that the behavior is not showing, even though that's what I get. My gut first is anger, but anger. I'm not necessarily letting it out everywhere.
Yeah. So a good kind of reflection for you, an exercise for you. And again, it's fine. Like sometimes you're going to lash out. Sometimes you're not. All of it's fine. There's no judgment either way, right? This is one of the most powerful parts of transformation is just that self-awareness. And self-awareness only manifests when we remove judgment, when we just see what is as it is, and we engage it and we welcome it like a companion, like a friend, because this is stuff that's been programmed into you since maybe third grade, 3 years old, 9 months old, who knows, right? It's cellular. And so what you want to get to is, okay, what is it that, so each time you go, wow, okay, that made me angry. What about it makes you angry? Like, okay. And on a scale of 1 to 10, how angry am I by what just happened? Let's say it's a 2, mild irritation. Okay, great. Let's say it's an 8, unbridled rage. Okay, fine. You know, both are okay. It's just, you want to ask the question, what is it that provoked the feeling? What is a belief that I hold? What story am I telling? You just want to investigate without judging. And I'm not saying that your feeling is wrong or that the story is wrong. You really just want to start with, do I even know what it is? Or am I just in unconscious habituated patterns that are causing me suffering? You know, like you being angry today in the morning is causing you problems, not them. You know, they're fine. They're going through whatever they're going through. That's nothing to do with them. So it's really just about, how does Tim and anybody on this call listening, how do I make management more enjoyable for me? And this is one of the first steps as we investigate. Scale of 1 to 10, how intense is the anger? So the first is, what is the emotion? And it's usually going to be in one of those three valences. Anger, fear, or sadness-ish. Then on a scale of 1 to 10, how much am I feeling that? And then the last is, why am I feeling that? Well, it could be because I had 3 meetings planned today and this is getting in the way of my plans for the day. Okay, got it. It could be because that person has been taking advantage of me for months and months and months. Could be because I got really misunderstood. And then what starts to happen is when you start to recognize all these things and you don't have to spend a lot of time on this. This is a 30-second exercise. What starts to happen is you start to notice and name your triggers also. You know, how often do you notice the thing that makes you angry is it disrupted the efficiency of your day? Well, that's your trigger. Your trigger is efficiency. My life and day and work is created in such a way that I want to get this many things done, and you are preventing me from getting those things done. Good. Now you know your trigger. For other people, they could care a lot. They're like, well, that's fine. I create margin and it doesn't bother me. I'm going to get a bunch of that. I'm not bothered by that. I'm irritated and angry that I think that person's a clown. You know, so maybe you notice that you're really judgmental as a person. You just look at other people and you judge them as no good, right? That could be another pattern that all of us have. Or maybe I'm just angry when I get misunderstood. You assigned a motive to me I don't have. You are assigning character traits I don't have. And that makes me angry. As somebody else would be like, I don't care. I don't care what they think of me. It doesn't matter to me at all, right? So each of us has a unique constellation of triggers that create a really good or a bad life experience in management. And once you know what those triggers are, you can begin to calibrate your life accordingly. For example, I saw you nodding, Tim, when I was talking about efficiency. So if efficiency is your big thing, one of the things you'll want to explore is, I wonder what it would be like to reframe your day to understand that at least a third of that day is meant to have margin installed in it, to make room for these very things. That you literally plan out your days differently because you know it just, every time it happens, it just tweaks you. And you're like, I've got a full day of meetings. I can't deal with this. And what I submit to all of you on this call is that, you know, at least 30% of your job is just people and their emotions. It's not getting anything done. It's literally just talking about how they feel and what they're feeling about the work they're doing or the person they're working next to, or as you just experienced, the sub conversation, the conversation you're not really often allowed to have, but you know is probably going on, which is their wife just yelled at them and they came to work and they're really mad at their wife, but they can't talk about how mad they are at their wife when they're at work. And that's the real thing that's going on, but you can't even talk about that. So it's just about, in your instance, if it were about efficiency, I would say de-escalate the amount of things you're going to get done in the day and make space for that, because that's actually going to boost productivity in the entire team. And you're going to have a lot more enjoyment, because what happens? What about that day when nobody has an issue and you've got 2 extra hours in the day that you had just blocked for like dealing with emotional issues? And you're like, oh my gosh, I got 2 hours back in the day. I'm extra happy. Whereas if I have to deal with issues, I had planned for that. I anticipated that was going to come. So again, each of you has your own version of this. I'm just working with Tim's to explore different ways. So the first step is just awareness. And I walk you through that awareness exercise. By the way, all of that is in Module 2. If you want to review Module 2, I talk about how to become aware of your emotional scale, what story you're telling yourself, all that fun stuff. So that's first one, non-judging awareness. Second one is notice what is the pattern? What is it that's creating it? And then the last one is design something a little different. And it'd have to be, I can help all of you design something if you want to talk about it, but I'm just talking about Tim's when he was nodding about efficiency. So I'll pause there. Tim, good, helpful, useful?
Yes, very useful. And sorry to occupy the whole meeting, but since I got here first, can I bring up the number one that happened that week on sure. This one?
Yeah.
So I have 2 employees that both have, let's say, traumatic upbringings that are causing all sorts of tripwires and triggers for them. And they're... tripwires are symbiotic, right? So the tripwire of one hits the others because of the way they are. Will hit
they sound
other.
Like a married couple. That's what married people do.
They can hit each other's tripwires really easily. So we've had a number of attempted interventions, and these 2 people are basically creating a lot of drama in the office, and kind of wondering if it's worth it. I have all sorts of problems. We attempted a mediation. In retrospect, I think we probably could have done better preparation for a mediation between the 2 of them. But it seems to have tripped it off worse, not better. And there's lots of backstory, of course, on all this. But without getting too much detail, getting too bogged down in the weeds of details, unless you want to ask any about anything that's going on, I'm happy to talk about it. But just wondering your thoughts on mediation, how it should be done, could be done, shouldn't be done. I don't know. I've got all sorts of questions about that when you've got two employees with those kind of problems going on.
So I guess I want to understand the question. I'm not sure I understand the question you're asking. Like, again, without more detail, it's a little hard to.
Yes, that's true. So we, you know, the mediation.
Were you the mediator?
I was not. I've had somebody else who's training in counseling right now. So we let them kind of lead that charge and kept me out of it. And I was feeling a little emotionally charged about the whole thing. So it was good that I wasn't in the room.
Well, it's totally fine. Yeah, it's totally fine. So what, so you brought in the mediator and then what happened?
Well, they met one of the people doesn't take blame for anything. And the other person takes blame for everything. This is what I said, they're kind of symbiotic, right?
Yeah.
So the person who takes blame for everything actually asked off. This was Thursday afternoon. They said, can I take today off? And ended up taking the next day off and was actually talking about quitting after the meeting, saying they felt all beat up. The person who was mediating said he wasn't really blaming you for everything. You were taking it on yourself. It's really, you know, your problem, not theirs necessarily. But that was their perception of what happened. But it really seemed to exacerbate the situation for that one person. The other person was like, I'm good. They don't care. But because, again, they don't take blame for anything. So, you know.
Were they confronted about parts that they should be responsible for?
In some cases. I don't know if as strongly as it could be. But, yes, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, I really would have to go deeper to really be able to give you.
It might be too much to go into in a meeting like this.
we can come back to it. If we've got time, let me come back to it. I don't want to weigh in and say what you should or shouldn't do. I would say if that stuff persists and is repeating, that's a huge drain on the system. And those people would need to figure their life out a bit before they. I mean, you're really trying to just create functional agreements. And you're inviting them to set emotional things aside in that instance after you've done enough processing. Now what you're doing is you're going, what you need to do is form an agreement. And I have a process in, I think it's module 4 called the ask and offer process, where people literally just say, here's what I ask. This is what I can offer. I can do that. I can't do that. I will do that. I won't do that. And then you put it down in writing. You go, these are the agreements that you guys have made. And we expect you to be held to those. And then that helps give that person who takes too much blame, they can kind of focus on only the parts that they violated. And the person who never takes blame, you can actually point to the parts they violated. So that's when there's informal power dynamics versus like they're equals, then that's when you would use a process like that. It's module 4, I believe. I can look it up, but run through that a little bit and you might run them through that process. It might be really helpful. Okay. You're really, what you're driving at is, hey, we heard your emotions. Thanks for sharing everything. We're going to get back to work now. And what work means is we form agreements and we honor the agreements. And when we don't honor the agreements, we own the parts that we didn't own the honor. It's the end of the conversation. Now get back to work. You know, and if this persists, then you have to understand there's not much more we can do for you. We've held a mediation. We've given you opportunity for functional agreements. And now we're on a PIP. Now we're on a performance improvement plan for both of you. So you either both start showing up functionally in your agreements, or you've demonstrated yourselves incapable of honoring the agreements that we've set together. And we can't have an organization where people don't honor their agreements consistently over time.
Okay,
I'm going to jump over to David. David had sent me an email in advance, and he had a really good question. David, why don't you go ahead and run the group through your question?
So I have a small office, about 9 employees and myself. I'm a physician, and so I'm looked at as a leader. However, I do have a management system in place where I have an office manager who oversees the daily running of the procedures of the office and personnel and such. And, you know, as a doctor, I've always told people, you know, you can always come to me, but typically you want to go to the manager for day-to-day stuff. But, you know, I would never tell you to go away. And so in a way, I've kind of set myself up for people to circumvent the process and come directly to me, because whether I'm a pushover for being manipulated into doing things, or maybe they don't want to confront the real manager. And so the challenges come up that people have said, you know, Susan, the manager, can be very tough, and, you know, she makes us work hard, and she's always on our case about getting things done, which is her job. And whether it's they perceive her as being overbearing or not, I don't know. I kind of was oblivious. I kind of thought everything was working great. And then I kind of get these rumblings that people are kind of unhappy with certain things. And then Susan, the actual manager, came to me and said, hey, you know, I've talked to this employee about, you know, getting her work done. And she seems to almost feel like I'm being overbearing when I'm just trying to tell her, you know, you forgot to schedule things, you forgot to reschedule things, and you need to address these things. And then an issue that happened just recently is one employee's son had been away, unexpectedly came home, and Tuesday's a light day. And so instead of the employee asking, hey, can I have tomorrow off? My son's away. We have a very light schedule. The doctor's not even in the office tomorrow. Would that be okay? She simply just announced to Susan and the rest of the staff, they were at the end of the day about to leave. She goes, oh, my son's home, so I'm not coming in tomorrow. And of course, you know, my manager didn't want to be this, you know, she feels like I'm always having to fight these battles and try to get people to go through the system. She's, of course, you know, I would have told her, yeah, you can take your day off because your son, you know, that's not a problem. It's just the fact that there was a lack of respect and authority and a lack of protocol. And I can see how that, you know, and if one patient comes to me and says, or one employee comes to me and says, oh, Susan's overbearing and causing problems, you know, I can kind of see both sides of the coin, and I need to be better equipped. And the fact that my manager is asking for help on this issue and approaching it, you know, I need the tools to be able to have a good conversation so that I don't set myself up for further failure by saying, oh, you can always talk to me, when reality is, no, you really need to talk to Susan, and you really should respect Susan. So I needed some help on that.
Okay, great. Great question. Common problem. Anytime you have people skip stepping, where they jump around somebody when they go around, anytime you're wanting people who want access to you, even though they're technically supposed to get access to somebody else, if that's happening quite a bit, it means there's something wrong with that person. And I don't mean wrong like they're broken. I just mean there's something wrong with the way that relationship configuration is set up. So there are two things that need to happen. One is you may have very good data from your other staff members that are saying this person is not a very good manager. That's a possibility. She may not be a good manager. It's also possible that those people are whiners and complainers, and they aren't a good, they aren't good hires. They're not good employees, right? So the question is, well, which is it? And then you're left in the middle, because they go to you and you're like, well, you've got a point and you've got a point, and I don't quite know what to do. So one of the first things I would say is you want to seal up any kind of end arounds. Skipping steps is not good for a system. You can do it in a formal and agreed to way in order to get good information. And you do that for the purpose of helping that manager be a better manager, and for the purpose of helping you ascertain the team members. So what I would suggest is I would say to the manager, hey, we keep getting people coming around to me. I'm sure I'm a part of, you know, creating that problem. We need to fix that. And one of the ways I can fix it is I just need to let people know I'm not the guy you go to for those things. You know, I'm an owner. I'm happy to talk to you as a person, but when it comes to management related employee issues, that really is this person. So that's the first step. I've got to seal that up. But the second thing is I'm getting static in the system. You know, people are coming to me with frustration, and that may be because they're just not very good employees, or it could be because there's some growth you as a manager could do. And I don't know which it is. And so what I'd like is, with your permission, I'd like to have a formal process where I interview the key players with your permission. And you would be the one as the manager to say to them, hey, David's going to talk to you and he just wants to help me be a better manager. So he's going to ask you a series of questions and it's confidential. So I won't know who's saying what. And then David's going to help me with some feedback and input on management. And then you just talk to each person, no more than 15 minutes. And you just ask, hey, how do you like so-and-so as a manager? What do you appreciate about that person? What are some things that you feel like they could improve on? What are some things that are keeping them from being effective? Is there anything else that you want me to know? And let's say after you interview all nine people and they all go, your vacation policy is terrible. You know, it's not competitive. Nobody else in the industry has it. And that's the most frustrating thing about working here. Well, great. Now, you know, it's not a manager problem. It's like, you're not competitive in your vacation policy or whatever. I'm just making something up.
Yeah.
But if you consistently hear that person is a micromanager. And by the way, when you ask these questions and they make claims, you would ask the question, what behavior led you to that conclusion? You're always looking for the behavior. People will make claims all the time, but the claim is not relevant until you go, great, tell me a time when that happened. And then they tell you a time. And then the next question you ask is that something you see consistently and repeatedly, or was that a one-time thing? And they go, no, let's just have that one time. So if they can't name behaviors, they can't point to something, if it's just hearsay, well, this person told me that, it's invalid data. If they say it only happened once, it's also invalid data. So you're trying to find consistent, repeated patterns of behavior that your manager demonstrates that you can then give actionable feedback to that manager. So you might say, she will often tell me to do one thing, and then 10 minutes later, tell me I did it wrong, even though that's what I said. I did what I was told I would do. I was supposed to do. You go to the next person. Like, yeah, she's always like saying, go do this. And then 5 minutes later, she comes back and she says, do it this way instead. And it's just inconsistent. And I'm kind of lost and I never know if I'm doing a good job or whatever. Now you've got a clear and repeated evidence that's like, okay, this person is giving direction that is unclear. And when direction is unclear and inconsistent, and when the target moves, people lose morale. And so that's how you can, so that's one way to do it. The other way to do it is, if you just don't want to do any of that, you can simply stop people from talking to you. You can simply change the rules. And the rule is, hey, I know I've said I'm available, but I realize that that's actually causing more problems than it is fixing solutions. And so out of respect for my manager, I want to make sure that going forward, she's the person you go to. And you can do that too. In my opinion, that blocks you out from the actual real data, which I think you would want. You know, that in that case, it is a little more work to do what I'm describing, but you're actually going to get real data.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, part of that challenge is, oh, but Dr. Wages, Susan is the person I have a problem with. And you want me to go to her with the problem? And I guess the answer is, well, yeah, maybe you should. Maybe that's the best way of approaching it, is to have a conversation one-on-one. If that's the person who's the problem, then you really do need to have that discussion.
Yeah, but the starting point needs to be, and as a physician, you get this. This is a diagnostic. This is a differential diagnosis of your emotional system. And the only way to get there is, one, strict confidentiality. And the rules are this. When you interview people, you would say to them this: everything you say to me is confidential with a couple of exceptions. One, anything you say to me that is positive about so-and-so, Susan, I'm going to share that you said that. Anything you said that others also feel consistently in the group, I will share that as the group's experience, not as an individual. And three, if there's something you share with me that nobody else shared, and it was just something you had, then I'm going to come back to you and either suggest you tell her that directly, or let me tell her that on your behalf. You can decide whether you want that to happen. If you say no, then I won't share it. And it's that simple. So that's how you create confidentiality and information flow at the same time. You create those rules and you just tell each person that those are the rules. So you send an email out from Susan to the company, to whoever, and you say, hey, I want to get better as a manager. That way Susan feels empowered. She's strong and she's saying, I'm taking this on. I'm doing this. David's going to interview everybody because I want to be a better manager. When David sits down with each person, you give that preamble each time. Here are the reasons information would flow. It is your prerogative whether that information goes, meaning the employee's prerogative.
Okay.
The interview, take the notes. Then you sit down with Susan at the end and you walk her through what you learned. You try to identify themes. You try to look for like, what are the things that you think are really at issue and need to change? And the other thing that's going to happen is you're going to notice when somebody comes in and they're a whiner and they're a complainer, you're going to notice like, that's not a very good employee. Like they're talking bad about everybody. They never take responsibility for any of it. They're unreasonable in what they expect. Now, you know, like, okay, now I know that person is a high risk employee. And you can work with Susan on that. Be like, okay, Susan, here's the deal. Here are the things that I think you're awesome at. This is what the team sees. Here are some things that I think could be improved. There's a consistent pattern of this. We want to nip that in the bud. And here are a couple of team members who I would say, you know, don't give them any leash because they're not here in goodwill. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm just making stuff up now, right. But does that help?
Yes. So what would you say would be like, you know, I'm so oblivious to the right things to say and do, like icebreaker questions to the employees to start the conversation about opening up and tell me about what your thoughts are with Susan. You know, what does she do good? What does she need improvement on? What do you dislike?
So the first, you want to get right down to business with these. You're like, hey, I want to make the best use of your time and my time. We're going to go through this pretty quickly. I'm excited to hear and learn about your experience of working with Susan. Let me walk you through how confidentiality works, because I want you to know there's confidentiality here, that there's, you're safe to tell me things, because the more information I have, the better I can help Susan lead. So that's how you would start the conversation. You go, okay, and here are the rules. Walk through those rules. And you go, first question, what do you appreciate? And just take notes. She's really great at this. I think she's got a great attitude, whatever. Great. Anything else you appreciate? No, that's it. Okay, great. What do you think is keeping her from being more effective? What are things that are frustrating for you? What do you wish could be different? You know, you can ask that several different ways. Mm-hmm. So that they go, oh, I think it's this. I think it's that. Take those notes. And then at the end, you just want to identify the themes. So if they're saying, for example, the follow-up question to, she's a micromanager. You go, okay, great. What's an example of micromanaging? Or she's disrespectful. Okay, what's an example of being disrespectful? And so this is what's so critical about those interviews. You have to get to the behaviors. If you don't get to the behaviors, you can't give Susan actionable feedback. All you'll come back with is, yeah, people felt like you aren't a good communicator and you don't respect people and you're a micromanager. And she'll be like, what? What am I supposed to do with that? I don't even know where to start. But if you go, okay, there's this behavior where you will tell people one thing and then 10 minutes later, they seem to notice that it shifts. There's a moving target in how you give feedback and information. That's a way more actionable thing than communication. Right. Communication is that big, huge, like thinking as a doctor, it's like saying you have disease. Good luck.
I'm not sure.
Now, oh, that's funny. Siri decided to chime in. So you're really trying to get at that. Like, what's that thing? And it really lives in behaviors.
Okay, good.
So Tim here just chimed in. I'm going to need you to hop on, Tim, and just ask that. I'm not sure I understand your question.
Sorry, I'm eating lunch.
Yeah, no problem.
Um, So if you have, you could have an employee who might be sowing discord or, you know, spreading, they've got a bitterness issue toward the manager.
Yep.
And then they start talking to other employees. And so those other employees get, let's say, like secondhand smoke. They get
absolutely
happens. They get secondhand offense toward the manager.
Yep. That's right.
And then you're asking these employees and you're looking for patterns, but you end up finding a pattern, but really it's not a pattern. It's one employee who's kind of getting everybody else in a
great question. Loose. Yeah. So that's why what you ask is, oh, tell me a time that happened. I literally did this recently. Sometimes people hire, Tim, we've talked about, this is the process that I run when I do a private intervention with a client. I start here always. Uh-huh. And so recently I was doing this for a CEO who, the person said, she spies on us. And I was like, okay, what do you mean she spies on you? Well, first she started, she says, she does shady things. I'm like, great. Give me an example of a shady thing. And they said, well, you know, this one time they were going to sell the company and they bought back my share of the company. And then they ended up not selling it. And then I'll go, okay, tell me what's shady about that. Well, I don't know. It just made me wonder. I'm like, huh. So now I know as an interviewer, I'm like, you've got a lens on this person that's already jaundiced and negative. So then I go, what's another example of being shady? She goes, oh, she's spying on us. Oh, really? Tell me what happened. That sounds pretty serious. What's going on? Well, she installed these, you know, ring things in the office, and then we'd be on the phone or we'd be talking, and then she would call us to talk about that very thing. So that's how we knew she was listening in to everything we were saying. So we whisper in the office now. And I'm like, so you observed this happen directly? She's like, well, no, the manager told me that happened. So I don't trust her anymore. I'm like, okay, so did you directly observe spying of any kind? She's like, no. And I'm like, okay, so let's move on. I want to talk about the things that are direct that you have observed, that you have directly experienced. And that's how you get through that. So that's why it's so critical to ask about direct behaviors and repeating patterns. So like, did that happen once or did that happen multiple times? How did all that work? And of course that was absurd. And I knew already because I had interviewed that other person, and that other person had incredibly bad blood against that CEO. And I just told the CEO, I'm like, that person needs to go. They're just absolutely toxic in the system. I don't care that they're your highest performer at your biggest office. It doesn't matter. It's not going to serve your organization because she's literally slandering you now. So there you go. That's an example. I don't know. Does that help, Tim?
Yes. Thank you.
And David, is that useful? So again, you're looking for those behaviors that are repeating and you're asking why. Why are you saying that? What did you experience?
Right. I think that's all very good ammunition for me because I'm a newbie at this.
Yeah. And be careful with it because it's this kind of information, you know, people will try to manipulate. People will, if information does get used in the wrong way, if you reveal information you shouldn't reveal, people are going to know that and they're going to be angry about it and they're not going to trust you guys anymore. So that it's very important. This is a trust building formal process that needs to be respected so that you're getting the results that you need from your people and your team.
Okay, good.
And, you know, feel free to use these calls, you know, like perform the interviews and then come to the call and say, okay, what do I do next? You know, like I did the interviews or what have you. So, and if you want, I can send you a draft email for how to initiate and perform that.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Let me get that. All right. Good. Good enough for now.
Yes. Yes. Oh,
cool. Awesome. All right. Who else is up? What else is going on? Michelle's loving the conversation. All right. I'm going to start calling on people. Nobody wants to be called on. That's the worst. Okay. All righty. I'm going to copy and paste this into the Zoom chat. You can, all of you can use this, edit it as you want. So this, just for everybody's, it may not work. It's probably too long. Maybe some way to like share a document easily, right? One would think. No, it's not working. Does anybody know if there's a way to share anything on Zoom? Like, can I drop a link? Zoom experts out there. Okay, I'll just send this as an email.
Is it a PDF?
You should be able to copy and paste.
Yeah, I just tried to copy and paste. It wouldn't let me paste. I think it's too long to paste into the chat, but that seems weird.
Okay.
Giving me an error. Yeah.
If you save it as a file, you can send files through the chat. So we'll save it as a PDF or Word document.
Okay, yeah. Let me do that real quick. That way all of you have access to this. So what I'm sending you next is the, is the email that the leader who is being evaluated sends out. It's really important that the leader sends this out because they're saying, I really want you to talk to this other person about me. You have my permission. I'm the one wanting this. You should be safe and feel protected. That's a really important part of the conversation. So it's got my name in there. So edit it accordingly, you know. Just make sure there's nothing else in there that needs to change. No, I think that's good enough. All right, I'm going to save it as probably a Word document is the best. All right. Let's see if this works. Huh. Nope, I guess it didn't work. I don't know why. It says,
you know, you click the little icon that looks like a piece of paper with the corner folded over.
Okay.
And then you go to your computer. I mean, it should give you a drop down.
Yeah, it's not. It's just. Oh, well, I will. I'll email this to you. And you'll get it that way. Okay. In the meantime, let's get back to coaching stuff. Who else has a question? Who else wants to talk about what's going on? Sarah, I'm calling on you. Last we spoke, you were going to explore, if you're there. Are you there, Sarah? I know you're on, but I don't know if you're paying attention. Maybe on something else. You're muted if you're there. Give me another second. If not, I will move on to the next person. Okay. Steven, I'm calling on you next. Are you there?
I am.
All right. How's it going, sir?
Well, Santa Fe hasn't burned down yet, so it's doing all right. We're just dealing with forest fires here. I've been doing the modules, but I have, you know, we've been dealing with so much as far as wildfires that some of the things have taken a back seat right now.
Sure, of course. Yeah, okay. Anything you want to check in on about today? I mean,
I did like what you, kind of the David conversation about, that gives us some insight and kind of some of those things, because you do get that from your employees a lot of secondhand knowledge. Is that actually what is happening? And so it's a good process for me to use as well.
And just so you know, in general, it's a hard process to run and to promise confidentiality when it's less than five people you're interviewing. So if you're going to interview fewer than five, I wouldn't promise confidentiality. It means some of the information might be distorted still, but it's okay. Just say, hey, I need to talk to you. I need to understand what's going on. But when you have at least, you know, six, seven people you can talk to, then you can say, hey, this is going to be confidential because there's no way to triangulate it. You know,
yeah, which that wouldn't happen in my office. Everyone would know who it was.
Yeah, which is fine. It's still worth doing. You just don't say, hey, it's confidential. You just say, I just need to know so I can help them manage. And I'm going to ask a series of questions so that we can get really targeted about what the person needs to learn and do.
You know, I will bring this up. With the one person I really do have the conflict with in my office, which is my friend for years, I've thought about really kind of alleviating that problem and putting him in a different position, which is something that I've thought about for a while. And it's more of an outside sales type of position, a networking position. And I think it'd be something he'd be really good at. And there wouldn't be as many times for us to be, for friction to happen. And so kind of do you ever kind of think that's a solution for a problem in some, you know, reassigning or maybe selling him on a different situation?
Yeah, it certainly can be. The way that I think about this always is first and foremost, anytime you want to reorganize anybody or anything, you want to start with agnostically, forget about the people involved. Just ask the question, what does the organization most need? You start the question there. And if if one of the things that comes up is, I need an outside sales networker. That's something that I just need. Agnostically, the organization needs it. We don't have it. Great. Then you ask, what's the best way to fill that position? Is this person, that's your question too. Oh, okay. Got it. Thanks, Ed. Is this person the right fit for this? Are they the best fit for this? Is there somebody better that I could hire? That'd be the next question you ask. So answer to the first question is not really. Like if this person weren't around, I wouldn't be hiring for that. Then you know you're just trying to do something for a personality. And while I'm not saying you can never do that, it's just you want to be really careful how often you do that. That's a tricky game to play when you're kind of like, well, I just really want them. I don't want them to feel bad. I don't want to hurt the relationship. So again, you want to go back to the way that you preserve that personal relationship is you make sure that you are honoring the agreement that you're going to be honest and direct about everything that's going on. So you might use that little assessment to have an honest conversation. So you'd say, hey, I'm still feeling like we've got tension and friction. I don't know how you feel about it. I'd like to see less of that. And one thing that I was exploring is I wonder if role definition would help us both have a more enjoyable experience and be more effective. And so I was putting some thoughts down on paper and I came up with this idea of maybe it's an outside sales role that I think you'd be amazing at. And if I'm honest with myself, the organization needs it, but it's probably not the first place I'd go. Or you might say, this is something that I've been needing for a really long time. Or you might say, this isn't actually something that I would hire for if you weren't in the organization. I'm doing this because of you and who you are. And so I want you to know that's what I'm exploring. So because he's such a close personal friend, you just want to make sure he's got lots of line of sight about your process and that you're being really honest and direct. As I said, the only time that I ever see personal relationships being abused in the workplace is when people feel betrayed, is when they feel that you said one thing and did another, or you hid information and you went and acted anyway, or if the employee is taking advantage of you in any way, or, you know, those are the things that create the problems. So, you know, when you say there's a lot of friction, what would you say is the primary friction you experience?
I just feel like he's always feeling he has to like It's the constant challenging of me from him to me of, well, you haven't showed us that yet. Or it's always never, there's an accountability situation there where he's never wrong. He's the smartest person in the room and everyone else is wrong. And he thinks like he can do everything better than everyone else. And so it's always, that's where he comes from when he's challenging me in a meeting or, you know, even an email sometimes is like, well, we can't do that. So what would you suggest? It's like, hey, I've reviewed their policies and I can't really do that. But can we talk about this? It's never coming from a neutral. It's always challenging and always trying to almost like up me in some ways, I guess. It's hard to explain, but it's just that friction that's always there. And I've even had that conversation that you told me to have with him. And it still doesn't change anything. It's always, and then he's in meetings, he's always kind of like Mr. Negative, right?
Okay, so what did he say when you gave him that feedback?
He said, okay. Agreed with it. He liked it, but he's never anyone to put his own feelings on display. It's very sometimes passive aggressive.
Okay. So the hardest part of your job is working with a close friend is that you have to be really on top of everything emotionally.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing. So for example, I would say, unfortunately, you will have to say to him, hey, remember that conversation we had? Yeah. I want to follow up because I feel like I'm not getting any change. And here's evidence of that. I sent this. This is the email I got back from you. That email, when others see it, has this effect on me and this effect on others. Here's another way that I would receive that better. When you did this, you said this. That had this effect on me. So what you're doing is you're staying super present to his impact on you in the workplace. Okay. That is how you preserve that friendship outside of work. And you may come to that place of, if you keep coming to him with this stuff and he's like, I'm just so sick of you always doing this. You're like, hey, I can appreciate that. But part of our agreement, if we're going to be friends, is I have to give you the truth as I experience it. And I expect the same from you, which you're giving me now. And I appreciate it. That's going to help preserve that friendship we have. We need to start figuring out, is this still working for both of us? How do we work so that this works for both of us? So that means you're going to feel the heat turned up rather than turned down until change happens. And change will happen in one way or another when the heat is turned up. It'll either change in the form of he blows up and walks out and says, I don't want to work with you anymore. Or it'll change in the form of he wakes up and grows up. Or it'll change in the fact that you'll see that maybe you're being unreasonable and he helps you see that. Some change will happen as long as you stay on top of it. If you keep letting it slide and keep letting it slide, it won't change. And that's true of any employee, but it's really important if you want to keep the personal friendship outside of work that it's treated with that kind of respect.
So it's almost confronting it in every aspect of every week if it's happening continually.
Yeah, and you're just focusing on behavior. And he may just be like, gosh, you're such a pain as a boss. Like, you're so hard to work for.
I think he does think that already because, you know, I am particular. I want, you know, this isn't an easy position to have where you're dealing with people's personal finances and their stuff. And so there is certain things that I know he wishes I was just all let anything goes, right?
And I would say that for you, it's worth you asking the question, you know, does he have a point in any of his feedback to me? That's the first thing you want to ask is, is there anything that he's said or done or expressed as a frustration towards me that there's some validity to.
Okay.
And then if there is anything that's valid, bring that to him and say, hey, one of the things that I feel like as part of our friendship, you've done a really good job of telling me the truth about how you experience me. And I want to keep doing a good job of telling you the truth, how I experience you in a work context. But one of the things you observed about me is that I tend to be overly rigid. I seem to lack flexibility. And I also seem to lack an ability to kind of moderate my intensity, that I come at everything at 100% all the time and it has to be this way. And I think if I were in your shoes, that would get exhausting after a while. And so I'm going to try to work on it. Let me give you some examples of times where I tried to dial it back to give you a little more latitude. So now you're letting him know, A, you heard the truth he told you, and B, you're working on adjustments. Then you can say, but there are some areas that it is never going to change. These are my commitments. This is what I'm committed to. This is not a function of I don't know how to change. It's literally I'm committed to this way of something happening. So you're giving him that feedback. You're saying, I heard you. Here's what I agree with and I'm working on. Here's what you're going to be always disappointed with in me. My first question is, do you think you can accept that? Can you accept this part of who I am and what I am? And you don't have to answer that right now. I want you to really reflect on it, sleep on it. We're going to follow up in a couple of days. And I want you to really think hard about, can you accept that this is what I am committed to? Then you do the same thing in reverse, which is, now I've given you feedback. The feedback that I've given you as part of our friendship and part of our agreement to be good friends is, I'm going to tell you honestly how I experience you. Well, how I experience you is, your communication style, I experience as really disrespectful. When you write emails, this email is a great example. When you write that, the way that gets experienced by me is you don't actually have respect and you're not open to a conversation. I experience you as primarily irritated and generally negative towards me and my directions. And so for me as a leader of a business, I feel like I'm pushing uphill with someone who I want to be leveraging what I want done. So the question I have is, do you think that any of that can change? Do you even want it to change in you? You know, in the same way that I told you, here's my commitment, it ain't changing. That's who I want to be. That's who I like being. And you should get used to it. You might have the same question. You might have the same statement back to me. There may be something that you say, hey, look, Stephen, I don't care. That's not what I want to be. I never will be. I don't even aspire to that. So this is what you're going to get. Take it or leave it. I want to know that. I want to know the things you want to change. And I want to know the things you have no intention of changing. Because then I've got to decide, can I accept that?
And I would say that that's already pretty clear to me. That he's not interested in changing. I think he's pretty happy with the way he is. Just from some of the conversations I've had, not as direct, but he's been the same way since he's been in his 20s, right? He doesn't aspire to change. He thinks everything's fine as to where I'm sorry, but somebody who's taking a class like this, who's examining myself and trying to be self-reflective of how do I get better? And I think sometimes that is evident. And I think the one thing that's come up lately that is really, he's wanting to be the office manager and I'm wanting him to demonstrate the office manager. Like, can he be in that role? He's like, well, I've been a manager for 20 years. And I'm like, well, that you've not been a manager in this situation ever. And so he doesn't understand that. He thinks being a manager is being a manager. If it's in a law enforcement or different places.
Yeah. So I would say this is where you don't need to get philosophical with him. he might want to have a philosophy of management as management. And you and I could go, well, that's not true. Doesn't matter. You're now in philosophical debates and you're not going to get anywhere. You need to get to what do I personally as Stephen need and what can I accept and what can't I accept? And let me be very clear with you about that. You as the employee need to be very clear with me too. If we want to be friends, you got to be clear with me about what you can tolerate, what you can't tolerate. Because if either of us can't tolerate that part of us that we have no intention of ever changing, then we either need to redesign the role to remove the friction, or we need to no longer have a business relationship.
And that's why I think the outside sales position is, it's more of a situation where you manage yourself and you manage your daily activities and there's goals to hit. And
you can do performance management instead of day-to-day management.
Yeah, and I've really got away from that. I've started really trying to get do the outcome management of, you know, shit, if you're getting your 30 apps and your 25,000 in premium and these things, I don't give two shits if you're showing up late or if you're on your phone and stuff like that, of really getting rid of that rigidness, because it's a different world we live in these days as compared to 15 years ago. And so I'm trying to get better about that. And I think to a certain extent I have. But there are some points that I'm never going to get better at. And those are, how are you doing your job? Are you calling people back? Things like that. Things that are very, very outcome oriented.
Yep. Got it. So I think the outside sales is a possibility, but I think you need to have that other conversation first. Okay. Where you just come back to, hey, it still doesn't seem to be working well for me. I don't know. Maybe it's not working well for you either. I want you to know, here's what I heard that's valid. Here's what I'm working on. Here's how I've tried to change. And here's what will never change because I don't want it to, because that's what I'm committed to. And then can you accept that? And then you go back to him with, what are the things of the feedback that I've given you? I've noticed there hasn't been a lot of change. Do you want to change?
Okay.
No, it's kind of who I am, man. I feel like you just need to accept that. Okay. Thank you for your honesty. As part of our friendship, we're going to be honest with each other. Now I'm going to be honest with you. I got to spend some time reflecting on whether I can accept it. So give me a day. Let me just reflect, think about it, and I'll come back to you. Then you come back to me and go, you know what? I really don't want to keep dealing with that. That's the thing that's really problematic for me. So here's the solution I've come up with. I think I could put you in an outside sales role that's going to decrease the amount of office work we do together, which is causing a lot of the frustration for me and maybe frustrating you too. I don't know, but you know, I think that's the thing. That's maybe the next solve. If that doesn't seem to solve it, if we're not getting the performance, if you're not happy, if I'm not happy, then we can talk about, you know, transitioning out of a working relationship, but let's give this a try. Cause I really want it to be successful.
Okay. And that whole thing is the meant to honor and the friendship more than anything, always. And being honest.
Yeah, it's always because it's such a close personal friend. It is the most important thing you have to do is you have to stay really present to each other's emotions. So even if he doesn't get it, you have that responsibility on your side. He has that responsibility too. If he betrays you in any way, goodbye to the friendship. But in a business context, you know, he may not know he has that responsibility, but he does. And so that is always the risk of working with a friend, is that if one or both of you isn't honest and one or both of you feels betrayed in some way or can't manage yourself in some way, then that friendship starts to change or end.
Okay.
So I'm just wanting to give you a running chance at not having that happen.
Okay. That sounds good.
Awesome. Cool. Great.
Thank you.
We've got Ed. Yep, you got that question right. Best practices implement is work environment with very few people. Yeah, you just don't promise confidentiality. And David, I recommend, because you're in an office, just have it in person. I think it's better to do it in person. And then Ed, did you want to ask anything else? I'll just check in on with you next.
Um
No, I think actually that this prior conversation answered some of my questions. I mean, one question I had written down is, having the same sort of process for how you occur to other people and what are the best practices for that. And what I got from the prior conversation is, you can do that. I wonder if there are good ways to word that so people feel free and open to be honest, or, you know, pitfalls, or, you know.
Yeah, so it's a little bit harder when you're the manager asking for feedback and input. There is a way to do it. There's something called the zipper conversation. I think it's video 12 of module 5, if I'm not mistaken. If you search, you can find the zipper conversation. And not every single question in the zipper conversation is something you have to ask on a regular basis, but you can edit it. But the one question you do want to ask on a regular basis is, how can I be a better manager for you?
Yeah, it seems pretty rich.
Okay. And at first they just may not have much to say because they don't trust you yet, and you've never asked that question before. But if you every 2 to 3 weeks when you're meeting with them one on one, you just go, "Hey, last question: how can I be a better manager for you?" That begins the process of creating a feedback-rich environment. By the way, that goes for everybody on this call. Get really good at asking that question: how can I be a better manager for you?
And it's all about the flow of information within
you. Yep. And then when they say something, write it down in front of them. Because it shows you're really listening. It's also, just so you know, possible that they could say something that could trigger you, that would make you upset and make you defensive. And when you write it down, you're like a dispassionate journalist. They're not talking about you. You're just interviewing them about someone else. How can I be a better manager for you? Pen in hand, paper ready. Oh, you think that I'm too bossy and arrogant and rude. Thank you. Then you do the same thing. You're like, great, what behaviors led you to that conclusion? Like arrogant, rude, those are things I can't really change, but maybe the behaviors could you tell me the behaviors, right? It's like, sometimes I think you talk too much. Okay, what's the context? What's an example of that? That'll help me. I just want to write this down. That's the way you start getting at really good dashboards. You know, as a pilot, that's when you start getting your actual airspeed and altitude in a team. And so really great question to ask. Highly recommend it.
Thank you.
All right. No further. Okay, Sarah gave me a little update. JD. Is there anything as your leader I can do better in supporting you, believing in you, clarifying the vision? Great. Great question. How's that been working for you?
It's been working well. Got some direction, feedback from team members. Also kind of have a couple questions. I think you even hit on this in some of your modules of asking what area could I do better at job-wise or work on. And if they're like, oh, you're doing a fine job and everything's okay, saying, okay, well, on a scale of 1 to 5, how am I doing in this particular area? And then they're able to give you a number, and it's not as specific and that to a point where you might not learn as much, but then you can take that number and put back to them and say, oh, I'm a 3. Okay, what would I need to do to get me to a 4 or a 5? And then they can give a little bit more specific there, and they don't feel like they're having to answer to a boss or a leader, the CEO or whatever, of telling them what they're doing wrong necessarily. So.
Awesome. Well, I think, I think that's another good thing. The other thing to be aware of is the way that you get good data and feedback is you take it seriously, you tell them thank you, and then you show them that you're changing. And then you can even review it. You can say, hey, last time we met, you told me to be a better manager. I could do X, Y, and Z. How am I doing on that? Have you seen any improvement or is it still lacking? Great. What else can I do to be a better manager? And that's how you do that. You know, again, it doesn't have to be every single time. People be like, we already had this conversation, but that's great. That kind of feeding back that you heard from last week and you've been working on it, that improves the chances that people are going to be honest with you as a leader.
Sure.
Good. Okay. Who else? Anybody else want to check in? Reese, you're back. How's it going, Reese? I think Reese is not available.
No, sorry. I was on mute.
Okay.
I was talking and I'm like, hello. Yes, I'm back, actually. Just trying to get my wits about me again. It's a long, long, long trip. And parts of it were surprising, nonetheless. I don't keep up with news from back home. So when I got there, apparently it was election time. So that made it a little crazy.
Wow.
I actually left 2 days after the election, and everybody was emotional, of course.
Wow.
However, that's beyond my control. I'm a non-voter in the Philippines. I don't have my dual citizenship yet. But in any case, yeah, it was a productive trip. We've isolated and selected our future office, so that's good. But the one thing that came with that is a tight timeline, because we have to be there. The office has to be ready by a certain date, and due to the nature of the country, where everything takes time, permitting and all that stuff takes a while. So I've learned to kind of breathe that out and accept it for what it is, and we'll make do with what we can control. In the meantime, things are happening fast and furious over in Mexico as well. So same things. I haven't been able to access any of the modules, or just because of time, and my routine was kind of messed up because of the time change. And, you know, I have this certain routine in the morning, what I do and where I do it. And when I'm in a hotel, it was a different time zone. It kind of messed everything up. So actually, if any of y'all have any, because I'll be having a lot more trips over there, and I kind of want to maintain the routine that I have, although that's tough. For all you road warriors, any tips or suggestions on how to be as close to your normal routine as possible? I'm a creature of habit, so when something falls off, that's where my, when you say like earlier, the irritations, that gets me irritated. when things don't go the way my normal day goes. So I'll leave it up to that. I'll be here the next few weeks. So I'm enjoying this conversation today. Lots of good stuff.
Awesome. Thanks, Reese. I'm not sure how much travel the others here that are left on the call do. So I'm not, I don't do much traveling anymore. I'm less a creature of habit, so it doesn't bother me to have things jumbled. So I'm not sure I have good input for you on that, but thank you for bringing it up. Okay. Well, I think we've covered most everybody who was going to talk. I know Sarah's in the middle of things. So unless anybody else wants to talk about anything else, we got another 10 minutes. I don't know, Tim, do we want to dip back into kind of the mediation stuff that we were talking about? I'm happy to dive deeper if you want. I don't know if Tim, if you're there or if you're...
I am. I'm happy to go there if you have questions you want to dive into there.
Good feedback on the last part.
Yeah. So are these two people that are at the same level in the organization? Are they peers, or does one report to the other?
Yeah, they're peers.
Okay.
They were in cubicles next to each other, which has been separated.
Okay. And give me one example of a specific thing that that they had, and then I'll work with that. Like, what was the mediation primarily about?
Well, there were, I think there were offenses on both sides. Again, both of these people had problems. One, they both can speak in a condescending manner to one another. One person is fairly new and tends to take the good quality of that person. They take the bull by the horns and go get stuff done. The bad quality is that they often take on more than they have enough knowledge to take on. And so they get into stuff way over their head and are starting to make decisions that they're not qualified to make. So that irritates the other person because they're like, you don't know what you're even talking about. How can you even make that decision? And then, you know, again, these people are both, let's say that person's probably on a disc test, they're probably both pretty good D personalities, right? Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here's what I would say. It doesn't sound like it's overly complex things that they're dealing with. It sounds like it's pretty focused on like simple disagreements over who has what authority to do what. Is that true?
That's some of it. The other person. So the one person may take on stuff that they're taking on too much. The other person, let's say probably won't, isn't working with that person when they're asking for help and certain things that should be reasonable, right? And then this play of interactions and emotions, and this one I nipped in the bud pretty quick. I was like, that's not going to be okay. This is played out in front of customers a couple of times. So I was like, this is not going to be okay. Or you can go someplace else. I just can't do that. That's not going to be all right. I can deal with a little bit of the drama in the office and deal with your emotional systems. But if you're going to do that in front of a customer, that's not going to be right. So that's
okay. So here's what I'll suggest. If you look at module 4, module 4, video 3 is the introduction of the RACI, right? You've probably done it before, but some of what you're dealing with can be handled with a RACI. So it's just two people in this case or whatever, that's fine. It doesn't matter. You get clear on who's being approving, who's got responsibility, who's informing, who has to consult before decisions are made. All that stuff has to get clarified. And you as the organizing authority will be the one to enforce, to kind of say, this is the truth, henceforth. You've got 30 days to learn it together. And after 30 days, we're going to revisit it. And then we're going to cure it for 1 year or 90 days or 3 months or 6 months or whatever it is, so that they get good at certain things, right? So that's for just like basic, like, tasks. So you have the authority to approve the layout for that part of the website or whatever, and this person doesn't. And now you know on this document, we have this agreement and that's functionally there. And if you can't honor the agreement, then we have a different kind of conversation, right?
One wrinkle for that plan is that the newer player person was hired into a role that we've never done before. So it was a new role that basically took some person's job and split it in half, but they were really working. So that person was a manager. So they were being, let's say, kind of an assistant to the manager but the definitions of authority are our boundaries are not clearly delineated probably in anybody's mind, not even that manager's mind, much less the person's mind. And they're still kind of working out the kinks of what are the clearly delineated roles and responsibilities and lines of authority. So that's actually probably part of the problem.
Not a wrinkle. That's the reason to do the RACI. I mean, what you just said is probably the RACI. I have seen RACI charts completely clear up personality conflicts. Okay. You don't even have to have any hard conversations. You don't have to have mediators, nothing. You just go, we're going to sit down. We're going to talk about what I think needs to happen, who should be have the responsibility to do what. You want to make sure that the person is experienced enough and qualified to have the approving powers, you know, and I'm, you know, that's where you're going to go through and assign the RA and C and the I everywhere. Right. So that's point one. If that doesn't solve it, then I would go, to the next video, which is actually at the end, near the end. It's a video 10. It's just, I call it the pencil process. It's like negotiating informal agreements, you know, non-legal agreements. And there's just a little simple process by which you go. It's a red, yellow, green light conversation where you talk through what is it that I need. And in simple terms, it's effectively the offer is here's what I can do for you. And then their response to that list of things is, I can accept that, which is like a yellow light, or I need that, which is like a green light. So for example, and then a red light is, I don't want that. So you can offer it, but I don't want it. So the most extreme example, Tim, I want to offer you weekly foot rubs at the office. And you'd be like, that's a red light. I do not want that. Thank you for your offer. That's not something that I want. And I might say, and I really love doing graphic design. And so I want to design all of your outgoing emails. And you're like, okay, I don't really need my emails graphically designed, but I can see how passionate you are and I can see some benefit. And so I'll allow that. Right. And then there's Tim, I want to make sure that I am giving you weekly status reports using this dashboard that I built that's going to give you clear line of sight on exactly what I'm doing week to week. You're going to be like, green light. I love that. Yes. So now the person who's offering knows, like, okay, Tim doesn't want foot rubs. He doesn't really care about his emails being designed, but he's going to let me do it. And then I kind of go, well, if he doesn't really need it, is that really something I need to do? And then the last one is, and he really likes this thing, so I'm going to keep offering that. And then the reverse is, I ask, here's what I need from you. Here's the list of things that I need. And then you do the red, yellow, green. I can't give you that because that's not an appropriate use of my time. I'm willing to do this. I don't think it's necessary, but I will. And absolutely, I can do that. I fully will do that. And that's the red, yellow, green on both sides. And the video will lay all that out. Again, it's for slightly more complex things. Like a RACI can usually clear up most things that are just able to hammer things out. But if there's more softer things that are more like, you would want to do that process. You as the moderator of that would want to review what they ask for, because they need to shape that in a very specific way. So if it's like, I want you to stop being an asshole, that's my first request. Like, nope, that's not a request. You know, I want you to stop being such a nervous person. Nope, that's not a request. Like, specific actions or behaviors that you need from somebody is what we're talking about. So anyway, those are two resources for you to play with and decide which one is best for you.
Thank you for that. Actually, I'm glad we did that. So I will go review both of those and we'll work on those as options. And I've got other people involved, so I may.
Yeah, they could do it. You don't necessarily have to do it. Like if you're one level above these people, then that person who's just above them would need to execute it. You just want to make sure they know what they're doing. Like,
yeah.
They may not understand how to do this stuff or how important it is. So you just want to make sure that they're trained properly before you would send them to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least we'll have a couple of us watch the video just to see, make sure we got the right steps.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. And then there's also something there. The next video is how to run that pencil process when you have like power differential. So there's one, which is how to do it when you're equal power. And then there's one that's how do you do it when one has authority over the other, but you still need to negotiate kind of what you need, what they need, how it's a helpful thing to kind of create alignment when you're feeling like it's not just you being the boss and being like, you need to do this, whether you like it or not. Sure. But again, use if it's useful.
Beautiful.
Awesome. All right, everybody. Thanks for your time. Enjoyed it.
Thanks, sir. Have a good week.
Bye.